Right. Thanks, everybody, for coming down. First things first, my name is Cody Ray Anderson. I'm actually, if I talk up here, can you guys hear me? Okay, then I'll stop. Yeah. I'm Cody Ray Anderson. I'm a web communications associate with the Office of Communications and External Relations. And I'm here to give you a lunch and learn about writing for the web. But nobody should be eating lunch, apparently. Okay. To start off, the biggest lesson I think I'm going to try to impart today is that the best way to write well for the web is to not do that, is to write as little as possible, basically. And to really think about what you're writing before you write it. You need to define your audiences, who you want to come to your site, as well as who is coming to your site. Think about what they know and what they need to know. You need to consider your goals. The best way to look at this is to take an approach of action-oriented writing, which is to say, what do you want your user to do or think after they look at your content? Finally, you've got to boil it down to what the most important thing you're saying is. So let's first think about reading for the web. People read web pages in a very distinct way. The picture at the right here is from an eye tracking study where, you know, people strap on those big funny looking helmets and are tracked while they're reading a web page. So notice the F shape. Let me rewind and actually explain what the picture means. The picture is a heat map of where people are looking as they view the web page, where the red areas are where they're viewing the most, blue areas where they're viewing the least. Notice the F shape of the heat map. Basically, their attention is focused on the top of the page, on the headings and on the titles, with a whole lot less attention paid to the stuff at the bottom. Furthermore, it's very difficult to see, both because it's a sort of grainy picture and I don't know how clear this image is, but there's like a bulleted list on that page, and that gets significantly more attention than the big blocks of paragraph text. Basically, users are impatient, they don't like to read, they want to look for clues to help them do what they want, and above all, they don't want to work to find what they want. Now that we've learned how to read, let's learn how to write. You need to write what your visitors want. Just the facts. You need to present your information clearly and concisely. And don't worry, I will be putting some examples on here. It's not going to be all abstract. And you need to make your content skimmable. Finally, your visitors want a single, obvious, and easily followed path to the information that they want. If at any point I'm going too quickly, or if you have any other questions, please just raise your hand or wave wildly, anything. All right, here's our first example. Can everybody read it, or should I read it out loud? Hands up if you're having any trouble reading. Seeing a few hands? Oh, of course. All right, it's lectern. There. All right, am I striking a balance between being able to see this and being able to hear me? All right. So the original version here is about 80 words, and basically it says a whole lot more than it needs to, or rather it doesn't say very much, but takes a long time to do it. The edited version gets to the point, and that's what we're trying. That's what we're trying to do here. Now, another specific example where some of the highlighted some of the changes are highlighted. So the original version reads, a network of 20 emergency phones covers the Anonymous U West Side campus. These phones are located outside buildings, along walkways, and in structures at various locations where they are most visible and recognizable. The box type phones can be used to contact Anonymous U security and are equipped with a blue light that flashes once the phone is activated to make them visible. To find out more information about the emergency telephones, including their locations, please visit the website. www.anonu.com. You get the point. We can edit it down basically by taking out everything that we don't need. It gets down to 31 words. Another thing that that comes up here is, and it's always better to link some descriptive text than an actual URL. We want to break up text to make it more breathable and to help users who, like in the heat map before, are generally skimming the page. So to make text more breathable, what you can do is pull out the most important content into bulleted lists, because these are very easy for people to read. Keep your paragraphs short, a couple of sentences, and one topic. When appropriate, you want to use headings, but make them very clear. I'm going to get back to this later. It's very important that people are able to skim your page and find out quickly where the information they want is. The inverted pyramid approach to writing is basically tries to take the way that people read websites and write to that. At the top of the page, you should speak in the broadest terms, hence why the pyramid's the biggest. Explain what's on the page and why it's important. In the middle, you want to narrow your focus a bit. Give your visitor exactly what they came for, organized in a sensible way. And then finally, any secondary or tertiary details can come later, where the user's less likely to find them unless they're specifically looking. Actually, this is sort of the end of the section that's specifically on writing web copy and not on best practices. So I'd like to pause to see if anybody has any questions. All righty. Either I'm doing a great job or a not very good one. All right. It's important not to duplicate content, and there are some very good reasons for this. If the content you need to direct your users to is on another page, it's always better to link to it. This avoids redundancy, and it also makes content easier to find for the user and to update for the web editor. When content's in more than one place, it's difficult and time-consuming to update. Basically, you're going to have to go to several different places and change it in each of those. Users will always wonder which version is current if they see two versions of the same text in two different places. And finally, it just makes the website more cluttered than it needs to be. That said, there are times where you do need to duplicate content. Notices, reminders, stuff like that. If you're using the McGill's web management system, you can use the block functionality to basically create something that exists as sort of one piece of content in the system's back end, where you can update it and it gets changed everywhere that you have it. Obviously, this is only for very specialized types of content, but it is, when it's useful, it's very useful. If you need any information on how to work with these blocks, refer to the IT knowledge base, which is available at kb.mcgill.ca, or from the IT site, mcgill.ca/IT. This is something we see pretty often. Pages where so much text is emphasized that the entire point is obscured, which, of course, is the opposite of what we do when we want to do when we emphasize text. I'll go through the problems one by one. Italicized text, in particular, is hard to read. It really strains the user's eyes when they're trying to read a big block of text that's italicized. Bold text is just frankly irritating at large doses because it really makes the text jump out. A good thing in some cases, but a bad thing when your entire page is bolded. So you've got to use those sparingly. Otherwise, they become a detriment rather than a help. Underlined text should almost always be avoided, and there's a very good reason for this, because on the web, underlined text immediately leads the user to think of hyperlinks. It's basically the practice that has been around. So it's really bad to use for emphasizing text. Occasionally, you'll find it'll work in headings, but I'm not even sure that that's possible in our system. So in general, don't use underlined text unless it's some specific instance where underlined text is the appropriate use, so like bibliographies and stuff like that. And of course, this is an accessibility concern because for users who have color vision deficiencies, they may not even see the underlined text as different from the hyperlinked text. Never use text that's all capitalized in your body text. Bolding or italicizing text is always a better way to go. It's unlike print, where capitalized text jumps out in a pretty effective way. On the web, it's just aggravating and very difficult to read. As I put here, use your indoor voice. Finally, never use more than one exclamation point. Maybe this one's a little bit obvious, but we see it enough that I thought it was worthwhile to point out. The web management system that McGill uses has a lot of very cool presentation features. You can create columns, or accordion sliders, or tab content to split up your content in very interesting ways. This is very useful, but it can be misused. In some cases, pretty badly misused. So columns really affect the way that a user views a page. They're used to going down, sort of, you know, reading the whole line and then going down. And even if, you know, at a higher level, it's pretty easy for them to make that distinction. It does break things up in a way that's not necessarily sort of amenable to, keeping your site readable. Accordion sliders, on the other hand, hide content. Now, the issue here is that if it's sufficiently important content, if you remember the pyramid that I put up there before, if it's at the middle or the top, if it's information about what's on the page or if it's the real meat and potatoes of the text, it really should not be in an accordion slider. Even if the trade-off, of course, is that the page ends up being longer, but it's better that than to hide something that's very important. It's really only the bottom of the pyramid, the most specific stuff, the stuff that people will only basically be looking for if they know they're looking for it, that should go in there. If any of this is unclear, please put up your hand and I can try to specify what these things are that I'm talking about. All right. This would have been something that would have been helpful to have a screenshot for, but I apologize for that. In the McGill web system, it's usually some kind of heading text with a little cross next to it, a plus sign next to it, where if the user clicks on it, some content is like made visible. It like slides out. People call them accordions, accordion sliders, sliders. I've heard any number of variations. I'm seeing some confused looks in the audience that make me think that maybe it's still not clear. Is anybody? All right, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to flounder around trying to find an example, probably. That's a good point. All righty. Thank you for that suggestion, by the way. Absolutely. So these are a bit atypical because they don't have the plus next to them. But basically, they're elements. When you click them like this, more content comes down. And while I'm here, I'm going to once again plug the knowledge base. If this is new and magical to you, I recommend you look through the IT knowledge base because they're a great resource for finding out how to use these kind of advanced features. My job here is to try to tell you how to use them right. Okay. Actually, since I'm already on the IT page here, I can give you an example of the third element that I'm going to... which is tabbed content, which is a similar sort of way to present information, but it has a bit of the pitfalls of both columns and accordion sliders. Like columns, they change the way that a user views the page because they have to interact with it in order to bring up different information. And like accordion sliders, it hides a lot of content. So these ones in particular should be left for specific situations where any questions?
Well, I have a question.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, what I'm going to say to that is that it is a way to reduce the length of a page, and in some cases it's definitely a good way. The worry is that you shouldn't use it to eliminate navigation, which is something I'm going to cover in a bit. So if it's long enough that it could be its own page, if it's specific enough that it could be its own page, it should be its own page under here, you know? For shorter information or for information that really belongs on one page, absolutely they can be used to cut down the length. Good way to place things. I think both have specific cases where they're useful. Tabbed content keeps everything at the same level. And so if that's something that's desired, if you're worried, as I showed in the with that heat map, that people are going to skip over the lower content even if there are links to it, then tabbed content can be useful for that. Any other questions? All right. As promised, I'm going to do a little bit about navigation. It's very important to think about the way that you structure your site. You need to group similar items together in such a way that, as I said before, people have a clear path to the content that they want. It's also very important to keep your menus short. This is often very difficult, especially on McGill sites where there's only this vertical navigation here. With the horizontal navigation, we're kind of forced to keep the menu short, because otherwise half of them don't show up. And finally, probably the most essential thing is to give pages names and links that give very good clues about the content that they contain. So these are pretty good examples of, it's exactly, as the Brits say, exactly what it says on the tin. Here you're going to get the mission motto and coats of arms, info about administration and governance, etc. At the same time, you can't assume that people are using your navigation to get around your site. A lot of people are, but a lot of people, especially younger users, search rather than browse. And a majority of traffic to McGill.ca comes from search engines, whether it's internal or whether it's from people who are at McGill or people who are, prospective students or what have you. A lot of people just search for what they want, and that's their main mode of finding things. So it's very important to structure your content sensibly, but at the same time, it's very important to make sure that each page works as an individual unit. As was brought up a couple minutes ago, page anchors are a good way to deal with the problems that come with having a very long page. They greatly reduce the amount of scrolling that people have to do, as long as they see the anchors. They can act as a sort of table of contents and let people know that if you keep scrolling down, you're going to find information on whatever. Again, the point comes up here that you should have very clear very clear headings. So they know exactly what they're getting. Again, I'd refer to the knowledge base. There's a special on this page block now that kind of reduces the work that it takes to add anchors and anchor navigation to a page. It again ties into the idea of titling your page as well, and basically having headings that are very clear. You should give enough context on the page that somebody who came from a search engine directly to that page, which often happens, is able to figure out what they're looking at. I'm trying to think of a good example here. So if you have a page on, say you have a page on fees for international students, and you have it as in the navigation as under international students, fees. All right. If it's just called fees, and the page is just titled fees, and it doesn't say anything in the body text about it being for international students, there's a very good chance that people who come from a search engine to that page might think that that applies to everybody. So that's why it's important to keep the idea of context in your head. It might be clear from where it is in the navigation to you and to users who navigate in that way what the page contains, but you should make sure that it's clear to everybody. Any other questions? All right. It's also a good idea, when appropriate, to use the sidebars, which you can, again, that goes back to block content, and images to help break up a page. Now, the sidebars in particular are helpful because they cut down the width of a page. The standard page width for a page with vertical navigation and no sidebar is very, very wide. The way that the human eye reads text It basically is like a line, and then it jumps very quickly back to the start of the next line. The longer that jump is, the more difficult it is to read, essentially. Very, very narrow text is also problematic because they're, you know, reading like one word a line or whatever. This is actually very close to the what people consider the ideal web text width. So unless it's going to be an extremely long page without the sidebar, or sorry, with the sidebar, it's usually a good idea to put some content in there. Images can be eye-catching and can help to break up the page as well. I'm probably going to be doing I'll get to this a bit later, but we'll also be putting out a series of web videos, basically 5-minute webinars on practical demonstrations of working with this system and sort of the best practices. And there will definitely be one on images coming out. The bottom line. Cut down your web writing to digestible chunks. Don't use unnecessary words, and definitely cut out jargon, or at the very least explain it. It might take some work to identify what qualifies as jargon in your case, but you've really got to try to get in the mindset of your audience, whoever that audience might be. Keep sentences and paragraphs brief and to the point, and make your content skimmable by adding headers and subheaders, bulleted lists, and keeping to short one-topic paragraphs. And as I said before, descriptive links are very important. The real bottom line is that you need to convince your users that your site is worth their time. Include easy-to-find information that's relevant to them, and make it easy for them to find additional relevant information so that they stick around. I've also included a couple of resources for writing for the web. A couple of them are books. One's an article online. In case anybody wants to know more. I'll leave that up there for a few seconds.
Will you be posting this presentation somewhere that we can...
I will, yeah. Everyone will be informed when this is posted, but the details are still being worked out. The slides and a video of the presentation will be... Great. Perfect. Excellent. And as I said, there's also going to be a series of web videos, about 5 minutes each. The first one will have similar content to what I talked about here, but it will also include a live sort of running demonstration of how of all this being done. So. Oh, does it not?
Does this work?
Yes.
The URL doesn't work. I just checked it.
Okay. Well, there are 3 books that still are in print. I am sorry about that. Over there.
Hi. We use a lot of maps and visualizations in our web content, and mm-hmm. I was wondering if there's any help available for accessibility in terms of colorblind preparation, and also I've heard recently about dyslexic-friendly fonts. Are those available in the McGill system?
Okay, I'll answer your question one by one. There are accessibility resources online that help you sort of visualize a page as if it was from a colorblind perspective. I don't have any on hand because although I touched on accessibility in this, it wasn't the main topic of the conversation sort of thing. Yeah, I don't know any offhand, unfortunately. As far as the dyslexic-friendly fonts, as far as I know, that's not something that's currently available. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have much information about that. Thanks for the question. Anybody else? Right there.
I see on the homepage you're using text overlaid over image,
yep.
And there is somewhat of a transparent background before
yep.
the image. Is it possible, is that customization available to other units, or is that something that's set up from you guys and only you can use it?
Well, the homepage is a very unique setup. As far as having a text overlay over images, that functionality currently isn't available. That said, that's not really our jurisdiction exactly. We're more the content folks. So I'm sorry, I can't give a more comprehensive answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, each sort of department area controls their own content. Are you saying that people don't care about the URLs when using descriptive web links? Because I like to know the URL personally. I like to know the URL so that if I need to go back to that page, I know what it is. But if it just says security's website, I don't know what the address is.
That's a very good point. And that concern does come up. Ultimately, it's sort of a two-parted answer to this question. First of all, going back to accessibility, people who use screen readers, a screen reader is a program that reads the text of a website back to somebody who has impaired vision. A screen reader would read out of a long URL that's printed out on a page as http www. That's not terribly helpful. Similarly, a lot of URLs aren't terribly helpful. Basically, the answer is that it's the web standard to use descriptive text and links rather than putting out the full URL. Because along with being more human readable, it's easier for search engines to pick up, search engines and crawlers to pick up the sort of semantic content. and it may not be something that has as wide adoption or knowledge as maybe it could, but for most browsers, if you hover over a link, it will actually tell you where that link is going. Yeah, the sort of official line is to use descriptive text in website links for those reasons. It is a trade-off, admittedly, but I think descriptive text is the preferred choice.
Sorry, just heard me. When you're linking to a new site, do you open that in a new window or the same browser window?
Oh, that is a subject of much controversy. When you're linking to sites on McGill.ca, absolutely, don't set it so it'll by default open in the same window. As far as links to external sites, there is some argument on that fact. The official web standard is to open in the same window, to not set what window it's going to open in, for various reasons. In actuality of fact, a lot of people prefer it when external links go to a new window, basically for the reason that then they're not moving away from McGill.ca content. If they close the window, they'll be back on McGill.ca, that sort of thing. I'm not going to take an official stance on it. I'm just going to say that those are the two positions that are out there. Thank you for the question. Anything else?
I have a lot of content, but I'm like design challenged. I was wondering if there's any help available, in terms of just like how to deliver it and make it accessible. We're in science, so I think some of our traffic comes from the media, and we want to make sure that we're appealing to the right audience. I was wondering if there's any consultation available from your office.
Not at the present time. I'm not sure if anybody here is. I'm currently the guy who's going out and talking to everybody about Google Analytics and preaching the good word about that. But I'm not sure if there are plans right now to hold consultations on web content. But if you were to get in touch with our office, we could definitely definitely talk about it.
So two questions.
Okay.
What's your thoughts on justifying the content? And number two, if you're going to hyperlink a word, what's the etiquette? Or, like, do you bold it as well, or do you just leave it as is?
Okay, so first, justified content. Generally, justified content in web content is frowned upon for the simple reason. So I'm going to give a brief history thing, because I've looked into this a bit. We've had this question come up. Justified content, when it's used in print, when it has been used in print, it's basically like painstakingly set up so that that like the spaces between words are roughly the same, and it remains readable. They like adjust the widths of fonts like very, very slightly and stuff like that. We don't have that kind of fine control. Oh, the other thing, of course, that they can do in print that we have difficulty doing on the web is hyphenation. We don't have that kind of control with web content. So justified content, that is text that touches both edges of the sort of content area, is usually frowned upon. It results in sort of big gaps between the text. When this happens a lot with very thin columns, you'll get like what they call rivers of blank space that just like run through the text, and it makes it very difficult to read. Going back to accessibility, again, this is not a talk about accessibility, but it keeps coming up. Justified text is considered pretty bad for accessibility for, again, people who are dyslexic. So, yeah, usually left aligned is the way to go. Similarly, centered text, except for very short snippets that are like captions or title or stuff like that. Centered text is also frowned upon. The second part of the question, I'm sorry, could you repeat it?
When you hyperlink something, do you bold it as well, or do you just leave it as is?
No, usually it's just left as is, unless it's part of bolded text or something like that. There are special situations where you would, but for the most part, no. All right, in the back there.
I actually have a few questions.
Absolutely.
The first, when you talk about how they search more than browse, so what's the best way of getting better search results? Is there other meta elements within the site, or is it just the content?
Now, it depends on whether you're talking about... This is a bit outside of the scope of this talk, but I'll give you a little bit of information. For external search engines like Google, there's not a whole lot you can do. For the internal search engine, tagging content helps, tagging the pages. And that's pretty much... And basically, going back to what I said earlier in the talk, very clear titles, and titles that conform to what people are looking for when they're looking for that for whatever's on the page. I think that's probably those are the best practices there.
The second question, talking about the I mapping and the F, mm-hmm. is that to mean that what goes in the bottom right hand corner should be void, should just be an image, should not be important? Like, what should you put there if you know that it's not really going to be looked at?
So I'd refer back to the sort of inverted pyramid model. So the content that you should put at the bottom of the page is the content that you only expect people to really be looking for to find, sort of thing. There are very specific details that need to be there, but aren't sort of the main thrust of the page. if somebody's looking for something and it's on your page, chances are they'll be able to find it if they're motivated enough. But the important thing is to keep the most important information where people are going to see it. Does that answer your question? Great.
And then I guess my last one is, sure, what if you have different platforms? You're also on social media. So how do you either link them, connect them, not duplicate? What are the best practices for that if something's going to be equally on one of your other platforms?
I'm not entirely sure I understand your question.
Well, I'll give an example. So let's say you're trying to put, like, an events listing, but you also have events listing on Facebook,
right,
and then you tweet it as well. What's the way to link to that so you're not just saying, I'm putting it on all, you know, three fronts, but there's a way that there's, like, some synergy between what you have on your website and what you're doing on social media?
That would have to probably be evaluated on sort of a case-by-case basis, I'd say. I mean, usually shorter messages are what does best on social media, especially since Twitter's 140 characters. So if there's more information than can be included there, it's probably a good idea to link back to your site. Again, this is a little bit outside the scope of the talk here, but I think those are probably the best practices. I'm sorry if I wasn't able to answer your question. If the question is specifically about whether it's problematic to duplicate content on social networks as well as on pages, is that sort of the direction you're going in, or?
Not really. It's more that, you know, is it best to stay on the website for a list of our events, go to Facebook, or to duplicate, or is it the opposite that you put on Facebook, like you said, go to our website for events? You know, is there a way of saying, you know, don't just, you know, go to any one and you'll get the same information, but making sure that you're helping people navigate the three through each source?
I think then what I said about the shorter messages on social media probably is probably the advice I'd give, to direct people towards the longer content, which would live on your website, because people who are on social media generally want to read even less than people who are on web pages, and they expect to read less. Thanks for your questions. Anything else? Yeah.
Since you mentioned Google Analytics, could you tell us a little bit about what that is and how we can use it?
I think I'll cover that very briefly just at the end. If there are any more questions about this presentation, speak now or forever hold your peace. Absolutely.
Sorry, I'm new. McGill, fairly new. Is this Drupal? Or what are you guys using?
The web management system is on a Drupal backbone, I guess. It is Drupal, but we're specifically talking about McGill's instance of Drupal with all of its various features and quirks. So yes. All right. As I said before, I'll be releasing a 5-minute webinar covering much of the same material that I did here, but with a running demo sort of things as they're done. So if anybody's interested in that, or if they know anybody who's interested in that, that link will be going out probably sometime in the next week. We'll send that out once it's ready, along with the video and slides from this presentation. Sorry, I was... yes, I think it'll probably be going out again in, don't quote, in the web editors list or whatever that is. Somebody brought up analytics. There will be another analytics lunch and learn probably in early, excuse me, let me start again. I work with Google Analytics as part of my duties at the Office of Communications and External Relations. Some of you may already have Google Analytics set up for your sites and be receiving reports. I'll be probably hosting a lunch and learn in early to mid-December, focusing on how to interpret results, how to use them best to sort of help improve your site. I've already done a few consultations with people, and they've gone quite well, and I think... More details will be provided on the lunch and learn when they become available. All right, that's a perfectly valid question. Google Analytics is a way to track traffic on your website. It was recently installed across McGill.ca on web management system pages. So you already have it if you're on there. We've been setting up reports, weekly reports on sort of how many people are viewing the site, how many page views each of your pages is getting. For people who have requested it. I think an email went out about four weeks ago or so regarding that, maybe longer. But if anybody didn't receive that email, come talk to me when this is over, and I'll let you know what needs to be done there. Well, the way that it works is it's tracking traffic across McGill.ca, but we're setting up individual reports for people to receive on their traffic. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Hi, our department receives the reports, and I'd like to thank you because I find it very exciting that we've been given this to be able to see how many people actually go on our site, which pages are of interest to them, is very, very helpful. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad so far it's been pretty well received, I think. It's been quite useful to people. So if you need any more information about that, please talk to me. And I think that's about it. All right. Thank you for coming. Thank you.